The government of Sudan is reacting angrily to President Bush's signing of the Sudan Peace Act yesterday. The law calls for U.S. sanctions against Sudan if it does not negotiate in good faith to end the country's civil war. But it also authorizes $300 million for peace efforts in that East African country. Over the past two decades, 2 million people have died in a bloody conflict between Sudan's Islamic North and its Christian and pagan South. Deborah Scroggins has written about the war through the story of Emma McCune. Her book, Emma's War, tells of a young woman, strong-willed and idealistic, who became an aid worker in southern Sudan. She met and married a Sudanese warlord and later died there at the age of 29. Scroggins says Emma's life in Sudan was a far cry from her early years.
Emma McCune was born in India. Her parents were tea planters in India. But they had to leave when she was quite young, and so her family moved back to Yorkshire, where her father's family came from. But he ran into some financial and legal trouble. The parents were divorced, and eventually he committed suicide. So Emma, I think, grew up with this sort of memory or dream of the warm colonial experience. It contrasted to the kind of cold, bitter youth that she spent in England.
Emma McCune did eventually fall in love with Africa, but before she got there, she entered a community in England in the 1980s that had a real presence and buzz, if you will, around the whole aspect of international aid. Could you describe that?
Well, she had gone to university at Oxford Polytechnic, and that was at the time of the Great Famine in Ethiopia in sort of 1985, and she worked very hard and got involved with a program at Oxford to help refugees. And so that's how she went to Sudan the first time.
Emma McCune arrives in Sudan in the late 1980s and falls in love with it. And she wasn't just like any other aid worker. What was her manner like?
Well, she was very striking, and she was controversial, too. I was with a photographer, and we were waiting for an airplane to come to this remote area of southern Sudan that was filled with refugees and had only been open to outsiders for a few months. And suddenly the plane came down and the door opened and out jumped Emma in a red miniskirt. And that was just so extraordinary because most foreigners in Sudan would dress in a way to be sort of unobtrusive and self-effacing, and Emma didn't mind drawing attention to herself. But she was also extremely hardworking.
So you have the presence here in this country, Sudan, of a young aid worker who is as beautiful as a fashion model and who likes that side of herself, but who also, in your judgment and in the judgment of many people who knew her, was very dedicated, if naive.
At that time, yes, she was very dedicated. And that's actually how she met Riek Machar, who became her husband, because Emma was working for Operation Lifeline Sudan, which is the big umbrella relief operation. Run by the United Nations. She actually worked for a Canadian nonprofit underneath Operation Lifeline Sudan. And she was trying to help the SPLA, which is the rebel army, set up schools in southern Sudan.
SPLA stands for the
Sudan People's Liberation Army. Mm-hmm. And she discovered that boys in the villages where she set up schools were continuing to disappear and walk to refugee camps in Ethiopia. So Emma began asking around, and she learned that at least some elements of the SPLA were encouraging the boys to go to Ethiopia, where they could also be trained to fight in the rebel army. And she wanted to put a stop to that. So when she learned that Riek Machar, who was a very high-ranking commander, was going to be coming to Nairobi, she went to a hotel to meet him and to confront him and see if he would help her to stop this practice of recruiting child soldiers. And he did promise to help her, and that's actually how they fell in love.
Now, Riek Machar is still alive. Tell us about him. He seems, by all accounts, to have been an utterly seductive person. But even at the time that she met him, he was in the military. He was fighting.
Well, he is a very charming person. He has a PhD from Bradford University in Yorkshire, so that was something that they had in common. And very shortly after they were married, he and several allies tried to overthrow John Garang, who's the leader of the SPLA. What happened is that the rebel movement split in two, and it really broke out along tribal lines, and that fighting lasted for actually 10 years.
She married him in 1991. What did she say about why she was marrying him?
Well, she said that she was in love, and she soon lost her job. And when she talked to her boss about it, she said, well, you're firing me because I fell in love with someone, and that's not fair. And she just couldn't seem to understand what to everyone else seemed perfectly obvious, that there was no way Operation Lifeline or Ski, that was the group she worked for, could possibly keep her on when she'd compromised her neutrality so much. But she was just a great romantic, and she thought that love ought to overpower everything else.
Now, the rebels in the South, who were mostly Christian and pagan, were fighting the Islamic government in Khartoum and had been since the early 80s. How then did this sub-conflict, the split in the rebel movement, come to be called Emma's War?
Well, John Garang, the leader of the SPLA, as soon as he learned that Riek Machar was trying to overthrow him, immediately put out a message blaming this on Riek's new English wife. He said, this war is Emma's war. Let's not be involved with it. Let's not be manipulated by foreigners. And what he was trying to do was really to sort of give Riek an out, that he could blame this all on Emma. But Riek did not take him up on that.
At the time, Riek Machar looked like a hero to Emma, but during the time she was married to him, a massacre took place of his opponents. Did she hold him responsible for that?
She didn't. She always defended him, and she would argue all sorts of things, that you can't win a war without killing people, that it wasn't his fault, that they had disobeyed orders. She had a lot of different explanations, and she stuck with him.
Mm-hmm. Emma McCune would eventually die tragically in a car crash in Nairobi in 1993. At that point, she was 5 months pregnant, you write, but she had already begun to have a complicated relationship with the man she married. He'd had a previous wife under his own traditions,
right,
and was a womanizer. Had she learned any greater lessons at the time of her death, or what do you think has captured so many people's attention about this story?
Well, I think one thing that impressed me about Emma was that she did stick with Sudan, and one had the feeling that whatever happened, she would never have given up on the country. I don't know if she would have remained with Riek. She was completely committed to Sudan, and I think that is probably the saddest thing about her death, that we never did find out whether she could have learned from her lessons, because she probably knew more than most any foreigner about sort of the inside of the war. But because she died, she never got a chance to do anything with the knowledge.
Well, Deborah Scroggins, thank you very much for telling Emma's story.
Thank you for having me.
Deborah Scroggins is the author of Emma's War, An Aid Worker, a Warlord, Radical Islam, and the Politics of Oil, a True Story of Love and Death in Sudan.